Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Well,
I'm excited for a variety of reasons.
I'm excited for a litany of reasons.
Oh, another word for variety?
Litany. I am so excited for our guests.
For our guests,
I'm just going right into it.
No, you really are, but I was going to say, we also should just say Real Housewives of New York is back as of tonight.
Right.
It won't be. It'll already be out, listeners, for your time, but we'll have enjoyed it.
We'll have enjoyed it, and I hear, I mean, this season's going to have a lot.
Luann is now last in the intro credits, which means it's going to be like Luann's season. Because it's always been Bethany.
Right. Oh, but
she always is the one that closes it out. Like the superstar, I feel like, always closes out the opening with the taglines, and it's Lou.
But what about the arrangement? Like the tableau, is Lou in the middle? Because Lou's been on the outside.
No, she is not in the center. Bethany is in the center, but okay. I think it's a height thing and also a salary thing.
Well, all right.
I want to get into
but
this
it's
with
Lou's
our guest.
Season. Okay, great.
Later on, if it comes up.
If it comes up. Our guest is truly like someone we've been wanting to get on the show for ages, and she's one of my favorite people.
We actually saw this person perform, and we were standing in the back of Union Hall,
yep.
And Bowen hits my arm and goes, Las Culturistas, and points to the stage.
This was like a year and a half ago.
And this was like a long time ago, and I was like, oh yeah, 100%.
100%. Oh my God. Truly one of my favorite people. We just, we spent a night a couple months ago just at Sam Taggart's house, played Quiplash. It was the funniest time
in
the world.
Oh my God, I want to do that so bad.
We got to do it soon. And that's all I did this weekend in the mountains. Okay, great. Let's
go
through
the
credits.
Mountains, they played games on television.
Playing games on
okay.
TV. Let's go through the credits, bitch.
Come on, give me the credits.
She is the co-host of Miss Andre with Marcia and Ray, an amazing podcast.
You know Ray Sani.
And you know Ray Sani. And oh my God, she's working on so much cool stuff.
Yeah.
She's hosting Reductress Live at Caroline's on Broadway, April 26th through the 28th. Tickets are on sale now. Get those.
Love it.
She's also leading this amazing media campaign, Headless Women of Hollywood. So check that out. It's making this great comeback because she got this started like a couple years ago, and it's still brilliant. But now to see it resurge is really, really wonderful.
Mm.
And she's taking her hit musical with Melissa Stokowski, Handmaid's Tale the Musical.
Yes.
On tour, on the road. And it's sold out the Bell House multiple times. This is a hit. And she's taking
It's a hit, babe.
She's taking it to Philly and other cities, mama.
There's a hit on her hands.
There's a hit on her hands. And her name
is Marcia Belsky.
Wow.
Wow. How do your hands feel?
My hands feel so good. They feel tired, you know.
From carrying the hit.
The weight of the hits.
It's a hit. I love that. I love how that sounds. You know, it just feels so good.
To say I have a hit.
Swirl it around in my mouth.
It's a fucking pull quote
it's
for
a
you.
Hit. Yeah.
You can say, it's a hit, Las Culturistas.
It's a hit. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm going to put that
oh
in the Handmaid's trailer.
Please, you have to include us. Yeah.
Fucking, I heard such amazing things about the show at the Bell House.
It was really a dream come true.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was, you know, Bell House holds like 350.
Yep.
And it sold out. And it was just like incredible because we did two shows at Union Hall and they were great, but we changed the show a lot between the first two that were kind of like workshops and then what we ended up doing at the Bell House. And it was just really, really cool. So now we took a little break and then now we're coming back and we have a show May 10th at Caveat. And then after that, we're doing this little mini tour where we still have to set up our DC show, but we're going to be in Philly at the Philomoka, which
Philomoka.
Is like, yeah,
that's a cool venue.
That is June 16th. It's a Saturday at 7:30 p.m. And then we're also going to be at the Bell House again at the end of June.
Oh my God.
So that'll be really cool. I'm excited.
And listen to her just like rattle off those dates off the top of her head. This is a media savvy.
Media trained
person.
Yeah.
Honestly, though, like the Handmaid's Tale the musical. Okay, so did this come from being a huge fan of the show?
It was a lot of things. I mean,
okay.
For those of you who don't know, I am a guy's gal.
Yeah.
So,
noted guy's gal.
Yes, noted guy's gal. I've been telling people I've actually never spoken to another woman in my life.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to this year. This is a big push for me.
Yeah,
2018.
2018 is the year where I make a female friend. But so feminism has been a part of my act. And I've also, you know, was obsessed with musical theater and still am. And so it's always been my dream to write this sort of, you know, a comedy musical. Like, I love the Book of Mormon and Avenue Q. Mm-hmm. And I'm such a cheese ball for just like the funny parts in a serious musical.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
Like whenever King George comes out in Hamilton, I'm the one who's like,
yeah, the physical comedy overwhelms you.
I'm like, this is so funny.
You see Hamilton all the time.
I know. I see when I do see Hamilton often, I always laugh at the King George part. It just tickles me.
$800 is a ticket.
Yeah.
She's playing on a Spotify at home and pretending she's seeing it live, and she's like, oh my God.
I'm like, Jonathan, be quiet.
Yeah.
But yeah, so me and Melissa were working on this Fiddler on the Roof musical parody, which we're still going to do, but it's about the L shutdown, where like Tevye like lives in Williamsburg and he's like forced with his family that lives above a Buffalo Exchange to move to Astoria.
I love that.
Yes. Hardship.
Hardship. It's hard for them. It's not easy. And he wants to be a Scientologist. So we have like, I would That's be a crazy. Scientologist like Leah Rimon 90909.
Oh.
So we started writing that, but then they pushed the L train shutdown back. So we were like, we really wanted to time it sort of like right when it was happening.
But that buys you time.
But it buys us time, and we wanted to do something. And so I read the book Handmaid's Tale, and we were watching the show together, and we had been joking about how everything becomes a musical and how that entertains me. Like, I'm sorry, but it will never get old to me being like, no, like the SpongeBob musical is actually really good.
I knew you'd bring that up.
And it's like, I'm sure it is, but it's still like,
it
man,
exists.
SpongeBob the
oh
musical,
my God, yeah. I've been telling this story because winter is now in its like eighth month. And
it is.
Me and my father and my mom saw Groundhog's Day, the musical.
Oh, how was that?
My dad was like, my poor dad was so excited. He's like, excellent reviews. It got excellent reviews. It's going to be a great show.
Oh my
so
God.
We get there and like it was fun. Like it was really like, you know, it was a good show. But this woman in front of us, my mom leaves, it's intermission. Every time me and my dad are at the theater, someone talks to us. I don't know what it is about me and my dad together. People are like, the talk show's here. Let's get it going.
Approachable.
Yeah. Approachable Jews. So they like, this woman in front of us is this Southern woman and she's like, I am so confused, y'all. What is like going on? It's repeating. And my dad goes, have you seen the movie? And she goes, there's a movie. And so I said, 20 Years of Winter.
20 Years of Winter. And so she was the actual groundhog.
She was the groundhog in that situation.
All along.
And if she doesn't know
if Groundhog's Day is a movie or a musical.
We have 20 Years of Winter.
That's like a very interesting question, though. Is like, you'd have to really spell out extra that was happening if you weren't getting it. So it's like, for today's audiences, how dumb does shit exactly have to be?
It has to be so dumb. That's what's like. And with our show, like, some people hadn't seen the show and they saw the musical and they said that they could kind of get it because we parody the plot, but also we make this whole plot because we're parodying musical theater in general. Like, Offred is June and she like moves to New York to become a barista is pursuing her dreams and all this stuff and then just winds up a handmaid and as you do. But yeah, like these other shows that you see, like, I mean, first of all, how many people had to die just so they could make Spider-Man into two people, I think, died. Two full human beings died so that some billionaire could be like, we're sticking with it. We're sticking with it.
Yeah, it's really insane. And the reviews you hear of it are just devastating.
Of Spider-Man?
Like that no one enjoyed it. Spider-Man.
Nobody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I did enjoy, though?
What?
You know, an off-Broadway production that I saw Matt at.
Oh, my gosh. Wait. Yes, let's get into this.
Cruel Intentions the Musical.
Cruel Intentions the Musical. We saw it because Amanda Schechtman, who's been on the show.
Incredible.
Played Catherine, which is the Sarah Michelle Gellar role.
Right.
And slayed
it. She was unbelievable. She is truly, like, effortless.
She's
like
the best.
She makes it look so easy while she's hitting the most intense notes.
Yeah. Like the songs were insane. Like it was a 90s jukebox musical,
but they
took everything up into this musical theater style, sort of. And just like, you know, I'm the Only One by Melissa Etheridge. They like made it this like moment, which is like starts off the show and her character.
Oh,
and I'm like, this is fucking good.
Shit. It was good.
And just, she gets a whole moment at the end. Like, yeah.
Just picturing her saying, I'm the Only One to like this gigantic musical, like whatever. Like,
yeah, what was that? Le Poisson Rouge.
Oh, great.
So it was like kind of like cabaret style, but still theater.
It was so interesting. So I went with Drew Anderson. Our friend, we know him, we love him.
Friend we know we love.
Friend we know we love.
Love him.
And we like got Groupons. So whenever me and Drew go out together, we are like 90-year-old Jews out of the retirement home.
Yay.
Just like, and Drew more so than me. Like, if we order takeout, like, and our food is 3 minutes late, Drew's like, I'm calling him. Like, I love going out with him because he just, like, suffers no nonsense. And, like, so we were there, and as soon as we walk in, so we bought bar tickets. So we, like, assume that we're going to get, like, a stool or whatever, but I don't really care. We walk in, and Drew's like, you know, if it was standing room, I just think it should have said standing room on the ticket. So we're like standing.
You're giving him an accent and an affect. And
that's how I impersonate him to him.
I love it.
He'll say something completely normal and I'll say it back to him. But so we're like standing there. And first of all, we can't stop talking about the lead guy's butt.
Oh my God, it's insane.
I mean,
this guy's ass was like, it was like two tree trunks.
Oh my God.
It was crazy. And
it was crazy.
Matt
and then
was
you
so
you,
close.
That was close to
Matt was
butt.
Close to this age, so me and Drew were just trying to see, like, we were just like peeking, like, but you couldn't tell. But we're like, he's like so close to this age, and the people like come out on this what's it called?
It's like a little like
a vom thing.
Like a vom,
yeah,
sort
yeah, yeah.
of
what
into
a vom?
A vom. Or like an aisle that's like, you know, it's like a raised little platform she can walk out
yeah.
to.
Yeah. You know, like the Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears catwalk. That's what it's called.
Catwalk, oh, like great. A raised catwalk.
Catwalk. Sure. So they like walk out and it's like, so then Drew whispers to me, he's like, I can't stop staring at that guy's ass. And like, I look up and his butt is like right there. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was a shock. Sorry to objectify him. He was
no,
great
but
too.
That's what literally the whole thing
it's
was about.
So
I
much
mean, it's literally
about
this,
his ass.
It's this moment.
I
it's
mean,
this like thing. Like, cause in the movie, there's a reveal of Ryan Phillippe's butt mm-hmm. and like seducing Reese Witherspoon. It is like right. an iconic part of the movie.
Oh my God, I forgot that he like fully got naked on the stage at
oh,
one
yeah.
point.
No, that's what I'm referring to is like, I mean, yes, it was distracting the whole time.
And me and Drew had slightly, we had slightly obscured vision. So we're like ducking around the pole to like try and see his ass. Like,
but that's what they make you do. That
no,
wasn't, that wasn't our animal instinct
no,
or
that
anything.
Wasn't, no. And sure. so then we had this like thing happen where at intermission this guy comes up and we've been standing and I guess the seated tickets were like pretty expensive and me and Drew paid like $35 on Groupon, so I get why the bar staff was kind of like they were being nice to us, but we were the only people standing at the bar. I kept feeling like they were like, what? Yeah. So finally, like, this guy is like, we have two extra seats at our table, you know, just sit down with us. And we sit down, and then, like, as soon as Drew sits down, they're like, wristbands! Like, they're like,
oh,
you
God.
Can't sit here. And but this bartender told me a million times, like, she was like, that guy was aggressive towards us, and we almost kicked him out. And I was like, okay, well, he was really nice to us, so I don't really know. So then they take away our, like, seats that we had just gotten, and me and Drew are bitching so much. Like, we're like, well, I don't see why they had to do that. And we're like, but I'm, like, still being nicer and everything. So then she gets us these stools, and she's like, you know, I talked to my boss, and here are some stools, and, you know, we feel bad, so go ahead and sit down. We're like, thanks, that's really nice. And then Drew moves his stool literally an inch because she sat us right behind a pole. He moves his stool an inch to the left and she's like, sir, we have stools only at the designated area, and if you are gonna move the stool, unfortunately the privilege will be taken away.
Oh,
like, she's like, so serious. But it
oh
was
my
like
God, but staff that was, of the Poisson Rouge.
I know.
I
no,
don't
but
so
that was everyone was really nice, like, and the show was like great, but it was so funny because just our faces, we were just like okay.
Oh my God.
That's amazing.
Even honestly, I don't know if Amanda's going to be on anymore. Amanda's swinging in the show.
Right.
But you should try to go.
I'll figure
you should.
It out. I'll
it's
figure
over
it out.
Soon.
I know. Well, did you go to like just see it like. Or did you
yeah,
want to go?
Yeah, I was wondering, were you there because of this inspiration of like with your
like,
show?
The way that
of,
these
yeah.
adaptations
yeah.
are being
well,
made?
Well, as soon, I mean, any like musical thing like that, I'll go see it. Like,
yeah.
I always love it. And if it's bad, I love it too, because I love bad theater
yes,
so much.
Very,
yeah.
So like, yeah, Drew, like I had been talking to Drew about how I wanted to go. And then he was like, oh, let's just get a Groupon and go. And then we just did. And then he told me that Amanda was going to be on it. And
yeah.
then we saw you there. And it
yep.
was so fun.
Have you seen the movie Cruel Intentions? Like, you're a fan?
I just rewatched it after I saw the musical because I was like, there's so much I didn't remember. Like, I'm
yeah.
a moron because I didn't even remember that, like, spoiler alert, turn it off if you haven't seen the movie. I didn't even remember that Ryan Phillippe's character dies.
He dies, yeah.
So I was, like, genuinely surprised. I'm like, oh, no!
Yeah, he gets
like,
hit by a fucking car. And it's a 90s jukebox musical. So he is about to get hit by a car and he turns into the light and he goes,
And I'd give up forever
to
touch you.
Oh my god!
Start singing that song, and it's like makes you cry.
I love too the like football player and Ariana Grande's brother.
Frankie Grande was in the show. Slayed it.
And they sang Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
Yeah.
And it was like so. That was another one of my musical theater moments. I was like, that's so funny. Yeah. It killed me.
What
too
did you
much.
Think of Foolish Games being the big ballad? I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Wow. The Foolish Games by Jewel.
Jewel got $40.
I liked their choices in song because they did like this good mix between like, I mean, and rewatching the movie, it's all in the soundtrack. Like it's so good, except for they added like the NSYNC and some
stuff
like that.
Super pop gum.
But it was like so like their choices of song, because they had like Melissa Etheridge, but then they also have like No Doubt and like, you know, they got.
Yeah, it was like cool songs.
It was a hit for me.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
It was, yeah, they did Breakfast
That was a really good scene.
And the whole cast was like really good. I mean, like, because I'm looking, because it's like, if there's one person who can't sing, when I first saw, so my dad buys like theater tickets and he like watches reviews. So he bought us Hamilton tickets like right when the first good reviews came out. So then by the time we saw it with the original cast, and by the time we saw it, we could have sold our tickets for like $1 billion.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We went, me and my mom and my dad, and Lin-Manuel was in it. And I didn't know anything about the show because I wanted to be surprised. I didn't listen to anything in the soundtrack. I didn't even really read about all the hype. And this is so mean.
You didn't like it?
No, I loved it, but I couldn't figure out how Lin-Manuel had gotten cast. I didn't know that he had written the show. So I was like, why? I mean, he's great. Like Lin-Manuel is unbelievably talented, but I was like, why is this guy who's so much less? Like I was
I was like, is he the producer's
like kid? Like I couldn't figure it out.
Oh my gosh.
And I think he could cop to the fact that he's not like the best vocalist on that
exactly.
show.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was when I got the idea, okay, if you're not talented enough to get on Broadway, write yourself into it.
There you go, honey.
So I wrote myself into Offred, because also Lin-Manuel talked about how like he didn't see any roles. Because I was also would give him shit for, you know, always putting himself in his shows.
Sure,
and
I
like Drew did the joke, like you would have been Moana if you could have. But
he would have.
So but then like he wrote about how he didn't see any good roles for Latino men. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So he was like, there's nothing interesting or actually with depth that I want to play. So I have to write it.
Or the most punk rock thing is to be like, I'm going to play this person who does not match my demographics at all.
Exactly. Oh, that's why we're doing all male Fiddler reboot. I'm Tevye. Yeah, I'm so excited. It's gonna be so fun.
So are you noticing things as you watch these like musical adaptations where it's like, oh yeah, like I could do that, like for Handmaids, or is it something where it's like, oh, I should be doing this?
Well, I know. I mean, Cruel. The thing was that I realized, I was like, wow, we made it work on a budget, because they're a full musical. They pay their actors. They have a full band. We have a keyboard, like, and we still put
it's
on this
small
like, full
scale
show.
Right cool, now. Yeah. But it feels big, and also it will get bigger,
it
which is what's
me,
cool to think about.
That's what really like sitting in the audience at Cruel Intentions made me really excited and like geeked out, because I envisioned a full band playing for like the show that we wrote or like shows that we'll write in the future, and it was like really exciting.
Yeah,
because our accompanist wants that. We found this amazing woman, Fernanda Douglas, and like I think we're kind of gonna like grow with her, which is like an exciting partnership, because she arranged the music and like she's amazing. And then I found out halfway through working our show that she's 24 years old. And
oh,
I was
my God. That's always like...
What? I was like, what? Like, she's incredible, though. So it's like we have this great partnership where I'm musically capable, but not like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll like sing a tune, maybe pluck out something a little bit, like be like, that? And
you're
then
not
she'll
gonna
be
arrange
like...
She arranges it.
I can't arrange
thing.
It. Yeah. And but she can make the sound that I'm like trying to like... describe to her like a toddler, you know. I'm like, I'm so thinking cool. jazz. <You
know? laughs> So did you like the instruments that you could that you do play and can play, like did you teach yourself those?
Well, I played piano growing up and I took lessons, but I feel it's interesting because I learned how to read music and play classical music.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did?
But I'm not that, like, that didn't teach me how to look at a keyboard and know what to do. I'm still struggling
with that.
I can read music to a decent extent. I'm not great. I'm not like an accompanist level. One time I tried to accompany my choir in like 10th grade because I was like, yeah, I play piano. And I was just like, oh, I can't do this.
And you're like, why the fuck did I say yes?
I mean, they showed me the sheet music and there was like 10 notes. And I was like, what do I play? I was so confused. So I could play like, you know, sort of like moderate classical piano, but then it's been a whole unlearning process of just looking at the keyboard as like a blank slate and playing things. And I just started learning guitar. And that's been really fun too, because I had this hang up with learning guitar where when I was like 19, I thought I was like too old to start learning guitar, because you see all these people who've been playing they're like 12.
I felt like that since I was like 12.
Me too. Yeah, same. It's like at 12, I felt like if I wasn't like a savant, like, you know, it felt like happening. Gymnastics.
Like, I don't know. I can't surf and I'm 13. Yeah. It's too late.
Like, if I still can't do a backflip, I'm probably not going to the Olympics. But so then I forget who I talked to, honestly, and I wish I remember, because I owe them a lot of credit, because they were like...
Dan Smith. It was Dan Smith.
It was probably Dan Smith. But I was like, they were like, think about like this. When you meet someone who's been playing guitar since they were 12, when they're 22, you see them as amazing because they've been playing guitar for 10 years. It's not because they started when they were 12. So if you're 28 and you start playing guitar now, by the time you're 38, you're going to be just as good as that 22-year-old.
Yeah.
And that's the only level, because all I want to do is be able to play rhythm guitar with my, I have a band, Free the Mind.
Yes, Free the Mind.
So that's been fun, because now I'm like really, and it's so much more intuitive than I thought when I don't have these like hangups of just feeling like, now I'm just excited to learn it as opposed to like feeling like I'm failing because I don't know how to just stare at it. Like, because also we're all friends with those people too. Like one of my best friends from home is this guy, John Langdon, and I hate him because he can... look at an instrument and learn how to play it. Right? Yeah. 2 seconds.
Fuck you, John.
My cousin growing up was like that. My cousin Michael, like we were like merrily strolling along alongside each other in life. We were the same age, and like all of a sudden he could like fucking rip it on the guitar.
Yes.
And I was like, how the fuck did you learn that? We do all these things together. I never see you even playing.
We do everything together. Where did you learn?
We go to the park together. We go in the pool together.
How
we're
can
cousins.
You explain this?
We're cousins. How did you do this to me?
And then he would like write songs. He would do like the whole Adam Sandler, like, what's the, when he sings in
Eight Crazy Nights?
Hanukkah song?
No, not Hanukkah song. The movie with Drew Barrymore.
Oh, Wedding Singer.
Wedding Singer. When he does, somebody kill me.
Oh my God.
He used to do that. And we were like 10 years old. And he could just do it.
It's cool that Adam Sandler could do it too.
It is cool that Adam Sandler.
It's really cool.
To his credit, you know, a lot of racism in his recent movies,
but he
can play guitar.
It's actually rule of culture number 17. It's really,
really cool
that
Adam Sandler can do that. Now, Marsha, we're going to ask you the question we ask all of our guests, which is, what was the culture that made you say, culture's for you?
Yeah.
What is the culture that made you say, that made you want to move in
a cultural direction?
Like, what is the culture?
Yeah, so, like a movie you saw...
Oh my God!
Like,
yes,
and something that you experienced in pop culture that defined you.
This goes full circle to what we were talking about
musical
before
theater?
The podcast, because it's truly humiliating. But I'm gonna be fully honest. It was Rent.
Yes.
Oh it
my
was
gosh!
Rent.
Okay. Yes.
When I was in seventh grade, I discovered Rent, and it like truly changed my whole world. And I was like, I want to do heroin now.
I
didn't.
An
I would love to be poor.
I want to be poor in New York doing heroin, shunning my white privilege, not acknowledging it in any way, and not paying my rent for a full year.
Wow.
I like to, in the original musical, they sang last month's rent, which is the only thing that could have made sense. And like the original, because this is how geeked out on Rent I was. I like downloaded like illegal soundtracks of like the original 1994 workshop or whatever. Like I was such a dork. It was crazy. I ordered in the early days of the internet, I would order VHS bootlegs of Broadway shows.
From eBay and shit?
From like chat rooms, like
eBay.
I would money wire some girl, and I hid it all from my parents. I like treated it like drugs. Like I was like, didn't want them to know.
You didn't want them to know that you liked Rent.
That I was ordering, that was, no, that I was ordering bootlegs. They knew I liked, trust me, they knew I liked Rent. But they didn't know that I was ordering bootlegs online of like,
oh my
cause
God.
I lived in Oklahoma. How was I going to get to New York?
Absolutely.
And then for my bat mitzvah, my dad took me to New York to see Broadway shows, which was nice.
And amazing. What did you say then?
We saw Hairspray, the original cast.
Oh, I saw them too.
I loved
amazing.
That.
Yeah, that was great.
I loved that.
The last number, the way it just kind of roars at you, you can't stop the beat. If you haven't ever
you can't stop the beat.
It's actually rule of culture number 103.
You can't stop the beat.
But if you haven't experienced You Can't Stop the Beat, the finale of Hairspray Live, you're missing something.
You're missing
because
something.
It's like a wall of sound hitting you and a wall of joy and a wall
it's
of celebration.
So fun.
It's incredible.
So good.
It's honestly such a good workout song too.
Yes.
It's really fun to run to. Do you know what I'll say is the worst ending to any musical that I've ever
go.
There's two actually that are tied for the same reason.
Okay.
So I saw the Queen musical We Will Rock You in London. My parents worked in London for a little bit when I was in high school. So we saw We Will Rock You in London. And then I also Mamma Mia. And what they both did, which was insufferable, is that the show has ended and they do 7 to 9 encores of every single song they just played in the show while you're like standing up clapping. You're like, wait, I thought this was the goodbye bows. Like they keep going, and it was totally insane. And I was with my friend at Mamma Mia, and after the third callback, she was like, "They're getting a little stage happy." I mean, it's crazy. Like, get off the stage. I mean,
and for like kids to be thinking that, like, who are not like totally awestruck by what's going on, to be like, "All right, like,
all
wrap
right.
it up."
We're at the Tulsa PAC, and we're bored. And also, I hate the musical. This is controversial. I hate. I don't know if I hate it. I hated Cats.
Oh, we've talked about
people.
Cats traumatized me as a child. Like whenever
Tyler Coates loves Cats.
Tyler Coates loves Cats.
That's his culture.
Well, I love Tyler Cats, or Tyler Coates.
No, call him Tyler Cats.
Hey, Tyler Cats. He does listen.
Hi,
he will
Tyler
listen
Cats.
Tyler Coates.
I don't think I honestly even have a problem with the, well, I do. But I was like watching it, and first of all, the part where they all speak in synchrony, like synced in poem.
I can't do it.
Jellicle Cats.
No. To me, it's like too weird.
Can't even get through it.
It's too weird.
It's too weird. Well, okay.
Also, I'm sorry, but did you guys like Jesus Christ Superstar?
Wait, I have to talk about that too.
I loved it. You're the only person I've talked to who did not like it.
I feel like it's just because I don't know the show.
Me either. This is my first exposure to the show.
No, I hate, like, Jesus Christ Superstar, I've watched it 5 times and I never have any idea what's going on because I don't know the plot of the Bible. All my Christian friends are like, I can tell you what's going on. I have no idea.
I was remembering the plot to the Bible. The plot to the Bible. As it was going along,
the plot of the Bible.
Okay, so here's what happened with Jesus.
Words.
This is like what I
no,
what
start
I
from
think.
The Old Testament and then end it. At
oh
Revelation.
My God! Okay,
it's
Adam and Eve.
That's like the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
I'll just tell you quickly what happened with Jesus. Jesus had a whole group of friends that were like very
catty.
Tight with him.
Yeah.
But also with any tight group of friends, like there's problems. Like there's going to be power structure, and Jesus happens to be at the top.
Someone's got to do the group text of the 12 disciples, like what that would look like.
I actually had a sketch. I was writing a sketch about that, but then I realized someone had already done it. There's a group of some group of gay people as the disciples.
Matt has actually written a lot of biblical material in his sketches.
Is that true?
Matt, I like it. I think
Matt
it's funny.
Has this whole nativity sketch that's so fun.
I like biblical humor too. Oh, I loved your, well, it's not biblical, but my favorite was you and Sudi's Cleopatra.
Yeah.
Yes,
and you were
yes.
in that
Sudi
too.
Really
I
likes that
too.
Period too.
I love period
she,
pieces.
She wrote a really good nativity sketch that was on SNL. Emma Stone was in it and played Mary. And
love
she,
Bible
she,
stuff.
She had just given birth and Joseph was like, we have guests. And she's like, okay, I said I didn't want to see people.
I just gave birth. Yeah.
Like,
I always thought, yeah.
The place is a mess.
Oh my God. Three men who are like, we walked across the desert to see you. Yeah, well, I didn't invite you.
Yeah, no, it's like, actually,
sorry,
I,
what are you
she
doing?
She was like,
I have myrrh.
That's literally, I mean, yeah.
You can sum up the Bible in one word, it would be myrrh.
Myrrh.
Truly.
Anyway, myrrh. I guess what happened then is
it
the group of
jealous.
Friends, like, they got all into it.
Jealous.
If you could sum up the Bible in one word, it'd be
jealous. Okay, wait, Matt wants
sorry,
to.
Sorry, you want
I
to talk
I,
about
no,
the Bible?
No, because now I'm like sitting here thinking, I can't remember why everyone was, why people were mad at Jesus and wanted to kill him.
Because he was preaching things against the Roman church.
And the Jews also saw him as.
Yes, people blame the Jews.
People blame the
Jews. They say because he was a false Messiah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know.
So, in Passion of the Christ, like Mel Gibson wanted to like vilify these Jewish people at
yeah,
the temple.
Some of us don't believe he was a false Messiah. But wait, so Jesus Christ Superstar though, I realized that they have
our
the
friend
song.
Joel was in it. And he was amazing.
He was amazing.
Really? Yeah. Oh my God! Everyone I thought was so, I honestly, in terms of the live shows, thought it was the best one I'd ever seen. And
one.
John Legend was the only famous person they have cast in those that I was like, you could be on Broadway without any. Name to you.
Sure.
You are talented enough
yeah.
that he could be in a show. But I would only realize how inappropriate it was recently because I used to sing as an audition song the I don't know how.
I don't really love it.
And there's this one part where she's like, and I've had so many men before in very many ways. And I was like 14 singing that at auditions. And like, I'm just like, and I'm like, all right, I'm a whore. And I'm getting into the character.
And the teachers who are watching you do it were just like, this feels wrong. Yeah. But we're going to let her sing it.
And I also.
Let her sing it.
One time at summer camp, there was this 12-year-old girl. We were auditioning for Grease, and she did dance 10 looks 3. So she's like, oh this 12-year-old girl, she's like, tits and ass. And the counselor, I'll never forget this woman's face. She was like, she thought she was going to jail. She's like, I'm getting arrested.
Tits and ass.
Orchestra, a balcony.
Oh my god.
And I did that audition song too at like 16. I was like, nah, I'm old enough.
Marsha would be a great Rizzo.
You would be a good
Oh
Riz.
My god, I got cast as Jan, which I didn't realize because I'd only seen the movie. The Jan was the fat character because in all the shows, Jan is like eating Twinkies literally the entire time.
And she's the one that goes, brush up, brush up, brush
up, brush up, brush up. And that was my big part because also it should be noted, this was at my Jewish summer camp, not known for its musical theater, and we cut Grease down to 30 minutes.
What was cut? What, did you do all the hits?
I don't know how they cut it down, but it was like, they were like, we have 30 minutes to do the show, no intermission. And that's what we did with all of our shows. We did Bye Bye Birdie in 30 minutes. We did Little Mermaid.
Oh.
I was one of the daughters of Triton.
Oh my god. I propose a challenge to you in that you and Melissa like fucking whittle down Handmaid's Tale the musical to 30 minutes.
Oh my god. We try. I mean, it was so hard.
How long does it run now?
Our first show, we were like, all right, we're going to try and make it 1:10. And we're like, how long was that? And someone was like, 1:50. We're like,
oh, fine. No intermission?
We did an intermission for the first one. The second one, we tried to cut it down, but didn't have an intermission. And people were like, you got to have an intermission. They're like, we're dying out here. So then, and that was a late show too. And we were like after David Cross. So it was like so stressed out. And there was a DJ coming in after our show. So in the last 20 minutes of our show, this dude comes in, like, you know the type of bros that hang out at Union Hall?
Yeah.
Like 6'10" monster, like, walks in the back and screams, God. What's going on down here? And everyone in the back is like, shh.
It's like, stop. Shh, it's theater.
And he's like, what?
He's like, I'll come back.
It is a weird dichotomy.
It's a very weird dichotomy.
Upstairs, downstairs, I mean, it's Downton Abbey levels. It's crazy at Union Hall. And this is fucked up, but when the upstairs like had that fire and it was closed for a month and a half, I loved it. And I felt bad because I was like, I didn't wish poorly on the business. I love Union Hall and the people who work there, but every time I went to a show there, I realized I wasn't dreading it. And I was like, why? Yeah. Because I don't have to walk through the upstairs. It's not just you have to walk through the whole upstairs,
the
past the bocce ball. I sound like such a kvetch. I'm like,
whatever.
No, I had my birthday there one time and it was a weekday and it was so amazing because it was a little bit empty and like it was a great vibe. But I had it on a weekend night one time
insane.
And it was like, how dare.
That's true. Weekdays are chill.
Here.
Weekdays are chill.
It's because Park Slope people on weekdays are like chill because those aren't the like finance bros that live out there that are going out or whatever.
Yeah.
Anytime you're looking to use games to replace your personality on a Saturday night, it's not gonna work.
Unless it's a nice date.
Right. No, I mean, of course, we all of us with interesting personalities occasionally play games. But,
yes.
But there are people who you can tell where it's like, if they don't have that bocce ball, they're not having a conversation
right.
Yeah.
Or if they don't have that pool table, you know, what are they going to talk to about with Jerry?
Are you a mini golfer?
Mini golf? I used to be obsessed with mini golf, and I've always wanted to go in the city, and they have these, like, under Times Square, like, weird mini golf things.
I've never done the under Times Square one.
It's like neon lights or whatever.
That's fun.
Oh, I want to do that.
It's probably expensive.
Purple
light.
That's the thing. I remember I first moved, I was like, let's do it, and it's like $9,000. I'm like, I can't even buy a Metro Pass.
No, Matt and I have been to this pirate-themed one.
It's in Red Hook.
In Red Hook, and it's so fun, and it's cheap.
Red Hook is so fun. I need to go out there more often.
We gotta go.
But I don't know if I don't know if that golf course is like the best.
It's not the best. It's fun.
It's not, you know.
I miss the ones in suburbia that you drive to.
Oh,
you drive to.
Because they're able to be very big.
Those are, yeah.
The ones in Florida too, like the theme park size ones. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
The ones around Disney World that are like, we got to compete with Disney. Yeah. We got to be big. We need a big skull.
What is this character?
There's a mini golf pup.
Yeah.
competing with Disney. It was like, we're going to put Disney out of business.
There's three things down in Orlando. Universal Studios, Walt Disney World, and that one mini golf course.
And King Kong Putt-Putt.
Yeah, King Kong Putt-Putt.
Oh my God.
3D technology.
One time, Marcia and... Oh no, speaking of Melissa Stokowski...
Yeah.
The three of us went to see Erykah Badu together.
That was one of the best days of my life. That was so fun. It was at the Meadows.
The Meadows Festival.
We saw Erykah Badu at like for free at like 4 p.m. It was amazing. And then me and Melissa stayed and saw MIA, which was so funny because she's kind of a hit or miss performer, is what I've heard. Yep, and like there were parts that were like really cool, but there's this one part where she scaled this huge wall. Like she didn't like scale it like a spider monkey. Like she like got like, I don't know how, levied up there, climbed a ladder on the back. All of a sudden she's on top of this wall, but then like her sound starts messing up. So she like won't start her song. So she's like straddling this wall, literally being like, turn up, down, like, and she like didn't show up for her sound check.
Yeah, I was gonna say she's absolutely one of those people who like does not show up to
her sound
check.
She was way late to her time. I saw the coolest, there's this lady who kind of reminds me of MIA, who is this Spanish rapper named Mala Rodriguez.
Oh, cool.
I think she's called La Mala Rodriguez, like the bad Rodriguez. Uh-huh. And we went and saw her at, where there was this thing, it was like Lollapalooza Chile, it was in South America, and she like, they have an hour slot very strictly, and she showed up 45 minutes late, and then 15 minutes later, they cut her mic. Like, festivals are brutal. They cut Lauryn Hill's mic at Afropunk when I saw her.
They cut Erykah's mic when we saw her.
You're right. Oh my God,
they did.
And I
got so pissed. I was like, what the fuck? That is Erykah Badu.
Oh, I remember you talking about
this. I know. Yeah. This is the problem, too, is like when they do it to a man, I'm like, oh, they just do it to everybody. Yes, and when they do it to a woman, I'm like, are they doing it because she's a woman?
Well, you brought
that up. Would they do it to Kanye? Like, you know.
You said that to me when it happened, and I was like, oh my God, because I was a little stoned, and I was like, oh my God, Marcia is
would
absolutely
they do it
correct.
But they probably would do it to Kanye and he'd fully flip out and it would be on the internet the next day.
Erykah was just like, she was like, fine, like, but like she is probably another... Women are just more like, they just give.
Lauryn Hill went and did two full, it was doo-wop. She's in the middle of her biggest song that she was closing on. They cut the mic and then she's like keeps doing the song for like two full minutes and the crowd is trying to just like sing it so we can all hear it, and then eventually security like walks her like off the stage.
No.
And it really was crazy too, because so Grace Jones was playing after her, so we were like, okay, well, you know, you gotta clear the stage for Grace Jones. No, there was an hour and 15 minute gap between Grace Jones and Lauryn Hill. Fuck. Where a DJ played.
No.
I was like, you did not clear the stage of Lauryn Hill for a DJ.
For a fucking DJ.
For a fucking DJ. It's like, yeah, Lauryn Hill was 30 minutes late to her show. She doesn't exist in this layer of time that we all function by. Like,
God.
Lauryn Hill's not checking her watch to see if it's time to call the cab. I feel like that's just not how she operates. Like, you know.
Damn. And it's also like, I don't know if it was Kanye. I don't know if the security guards would have come to like.
You know what?
Take or as soon as they did with fucking Lauren.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway.
Here's the question. You are in a festival with The Handmaid's Tale.
They cut
Lauryn Hill is scheduled before you and is late.
Yeah.
They come to you and say,
can you start late? Oh, that's right, because I'm the DJ.
It's Lauryn Hill. We have to let her go.
Absolutely.
Or, and you would willingly.
You think
willingly,
I'm going to be the bitch who's like, my Handmaid's Tale is too important for Lauryn Hill. Just, I'd be like, I'm going to be watching the show. Just let me know when we're on. Like,
what if it meant like she took
But after you is Grace Jones, and she has to start on time.
Then I go to the back and I say, Melissa, we really do got to cut the show to 30 minutes. We got to cut it. No,
amazing.
But I get it. I mean, I get it. But I honestly think it's really rude to compare my art to a DJ. But okay, I guess you just did that.
What we're actually doing is comparing your art to Lauren and Grace.
Right. Of course. My contemporaries.
Your contempt.
I like Lauryn Hill because she hates white people fairly, but she has a soft spot for the Jews. So I think I could get in there.
I think Lauren's like, I think Lauren is very accepting of Asians too, probably. I don't know for real, but I feel like she has.
I feel like together we have to find this out now. Sorry Matt
We'll figure it out.
It's your guys' job.
Thank you.
Sorry, you were saying about the Bible.
Oh yeah, anyway, it ends with Jesus dying. Sorry. Now I remember.
I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did love, because I do get so genuinely confused, but I liked the sort of futuristic costumes that they did with the Jesus Christ Superstar Live.
Yes, yes.
Wait,
but I loved laughing
second.
Too, because it's so dramatic. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the buzz?
What is the ending of the Bible?
Revelations.
Oh, but what happens? Is it an exciting ending?
It's eschatology. It's like the world. It's like how the world ends.
Yeah, that's like apocalyptic stuff. Yeah, that's why Christians all think that they're going to be the special ones who see the world end. It's like, keep wishing, babe.
Oh, okay.
Keep wishing, babe. I was going to say, oh, and then one more thing about Erykah Badu. Mm-hmm. Everyone, this is required viewing. You know, Pitchfork does those over and under videos where they interview people and then like they give them a random topic and they have to say if it's overrated or underrated and describe why.
Over.
Erykah Badu.
Under.
Right. Erykah Badu has one, and every single answer she gives is so fucking funny. I think she's stoned. It's so funny, and she says everything is underrated. She's supportive of everything.
Underrated. She doesn't need that underrated. Bitterness. Listening to her music is so therapeutic because, like, she is truly on this different level where she, like, completely accepts herself, and in that, she's not suffering bullshit.
No.
Like, she's like, why waste your time not being happy?
Exactly.
Like, this is why I have my diet. Like, whenever I want to feel crazy and lean into it, I listen to Erykah Badu, and whenever I want to feel crazy and fight it but make it profound, I listen to Lauryn Hill.
That's funny. Like, that's great.
Lauryn Hill's first album for a breakup, it's like, I just remember this dude broke my heart in Portland. I'm, like, driving around, like, You just lost one. I'm like screaming. Like, no, it's good. I was like, you know, it's a healing thing because you're like, well, she became Lauryn Hill after Who's the Loser Who Broke Her Heart.
Exactly. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill is like such a good breakup.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Never date the boy in the band.
Oh.
What do you guys listen to before you go to bed?
Good question.
Lately, I'm listening to Kacey Musgraves. She's got a new album out.
Oh, yeah. You guys have... Now I have to check her out.
Oh, Marsh, you'd love her.
I haven't listened to her.
And she, like, her old stuff is very, very twang and very, like, banjo plucky and pedal steely, but...
Love that.
She, like, her whole claim to fame when she first came out and came onto the scene in 2013 was that she was, like, quote-unquote progressive.
She's a country singer?
She's like a country singer. Girl who's acknowledged gay people.
Like, sings about gay people and, like... A lot of
There's
her songs.
There's pretty much only been the Dixie Chicks, right?
Yeah.
And even that was very indirect until that became their brand. And
totally.
They were like,
oh, true. Yeah. Until they had already gotten their CDs burned. They're like, might as well lean in.
Yeah. Exactly. But Kacey also like sings about weed all the fucking time. And it's like.
I love that. I like crazy. Country music. Like I like
I
old country.
Me too.
I love listening to like Woody Guthrie and Hank Williams and stuff like that.
Hank Williams.
One kid who went viral was so funny. The guy on the wall in the Walmart, the little boy.
Oh yeah, that was good.
That's
honestly
gorgeous.
Thank you. Country music.
It's what we need right now.
Country music will unite us.
You know what I mean?
We need
Roseanne back. We need American Idol back.
Fuck,
we need country music. We need Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood.
And you got to get black country into the mainstream country. Because like, you remember how crazy it was when Beyonce played with the Dixie Chicks?
Oh, yeah.
And you
think
about it, it's like, Beyonce, in her latest album, like she did this like country song.
It was
and like
her song they sang.
Yeah. And it's like, so it's like, there's so much that like, you know, because the black people have been like taken out of the South's narrative I wonder with the progressive country movement if you could have like, I mean, right now you have like teachers striking in Oklahoma where I'm from and shit. So it's like, and you have some of these places being turned like that you would never think would vote anything but like crazy Republican. So why not country music?
You know what?
Mickey Guyton is this amazing country singer. She's and she's black and she's so
good.
Oh
yeah, yeah. I've listened to her.
Yeah, yeah.
She's good.
So anyway, no, but
there's
a lot of good.
There's a couple.
I gotta look it up.
There's a couple girls that have been on The Voice too that have been black that have been like
I need
my
to watch
thing,
The Voice more.
That have been like my thing is country music. This is what I want, and they've been good.
Yeah.
Like, but and another,
but they
just
they know
do
there's
have,
no
like, but they come from a gospel place.
Mm-hmm.
So there's it, but that is part of the South.
Totally.
So like, where is that music? You're
They're
right.
missing such a market. I mean, that's what's so stupid is like because they know that no mainstream country record is going to uncontroversially like it's crazy because these are the same people that say racism doesn't exist anymore.
Oh,
and
God.
Then it's like, but what kind of like Nashville Records is going to sign a bunch of black artists
totally.
With the same label as the white country artists?
Exactly.
They might have their own label for hip hop or black country or whatever, but
right.
they keep it separate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Two different genres.
Which is separate,
pop
equal.
Country is implicitly white.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, if you say pop country.
And it all looks the same.
It's
like blonde.
It is so,
the women look the same. The men
oh my
mostly
God.
Look the same.
That was
like,
my
have you ever, do you
childhood.
Know Ray Lynn? Do you know the singer Ray Lynn? And God made girls.
Yeah.
And God made girls.
Oh, God.
Kill
he made
me.
Them so you rock your world. Like,
kill
basically,
me.
God made girls because boys need it. It was like, somebody's got to tell them how to flirt. Like,
oh.
It's just like, you need to listen to this song. It's sicko.
Yeah, that's how all of them are. They're like, It's so bad.
That's the title of Epp, God Made Girls.
Now imagine me as like a little Jewish high schooler in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and like fucking Brianna pulling up in her huge ass pickup truck, like blasting like, God, she thinks my tractor sexy. I'm like, I hate this place.
Ew, I saw him in concert once.
Kill me. Really?
Yeah, my dad liked him a lot. He was pretty good. I always thought he was hot.
Pretty good. Oh my gosh. Hey, you know what? A lot of people have like told me confessionally that they are attracted to those. Wait, you posted this, the Daniel Tosh, that you think Daniel Tosh is hot on the posters?
Wait, so jokingly a little bit said maybe that Matt's there was a picture of him in Matt's the subway. There was a picture of him in the subway that was like,
he does not look good.
Matt, I don't know. I like Daniel Tosh.
I don't know, guys. I like really want to fuck
Tosh. You
want to
be in bed like, I got a video you should put on your show.
And then he's gonna like
Tosh 2.0.
He's gonna like say that you deserve to get raped.
Yeah, that's Matt.
Does. That's what he says.
No, yes. he had some breakdown where some woman was heckling him, and then he yelled and back he was at her like, "Get raped." And it's almost like to me, it's like just write a better joke. Even like it's
that's
like,
the thing. It's like
get raped.
Ew. I didn't know
when
that.
People are offended over like. Jokes and poor taste. It's about taste. It's not about exactly. Fine, I'm offended, but actually I'm disappointed in you for not coming up with a better
fucking
joke.
There are all comedians that we disagree with that we like because they're actually funny. Like, and they're clever from the point of view. Like, that's the thing. It's like when your shit's hack, like they go up there, they're like, oh, I'm being censored. It's like, actually all that's happening is
that you're doing
the same thing, and when your shit bombs, you blame PC culture. And imagine if I had ever on a singular joke blamed the fact that I was a woman.
Yes.
I would be eaten alive. Oh, you didn't laugh at that because I'm a woman. They'll say that on stage. You didn't laugh. Oh, PC culture. It's like your joke just bombed, dude. And they'll tell some jokes, and now there are enough people or women who feel comfortable being like, hey, that joke made me think that you're an asshole. That's all we're saying.
Yeah.
All they're doing is saying something, and we're not censoring you. We're just calling you an asshole. Yeah. But to you, that's completely unacceptable. And the same thing as censorship. Like fucking Ricky Gervais. Oh my God. Whatever. I don't think so, honey. Ricky Gervais. Because like his whole latest special, Humanity, he's talking about this trans joke that he made about Caitlyn Jenner. And literally at one point, he's like sitting on his stool going, now let me tell you why that's funny. And it's like, if you're telling us why it's funny, he's like crossing his leg. Now let me describe to you why that is funny. And it's like, it's not. It's ever since he got skinny, he's not funny. I hate to say it.
He became known for being like,
he thinks he's hot now.
He had one great moment in The Office.
Yeah.
And like, and then like that, like that is actually, you go back and watch that and it's still genius.
And Extras. And loved Extras.
Extras was fun.
But I didn't even like that, the next one with Warwick Davis. I didn't like the next shows that they did really.
I just, ever since he lost the weight, he's been fun.
Did you guys like my British accent?
I thought it was amazing. Really good. And you've been killing the accents all.
Did you say?
You are Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
My favorite accent I just did that Sam Taggart loves, which I love that Southern, he loved.
Is, do no, it, dialect.
I have one character, he's called the Australian Bachelor.
Okay,
and it's, so it's the Bachelor, if he were Australian.
Okay. Go on.
He says, hello, my name's Meech. And I'm the Bachelor.
Bachelor.
Marsha, these accents.
You have a talent.
I'm the Bachelor.
You are Meryl Streep.
It's pretty fun being the Bachelor, yeah.
I think, and that's just all his personality.
You say
it's
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. She's Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Guys, we've come to the second installment of our newest segment called Voice Memo,
you bitch.
So fan favorites are going to leave voice memos for us to play.
Yep. And we will react in real time the fact. And our voice memo, you bitch, today is from Pat Regan.
And so Pat.
But I guess he'll introduce himself right now.
Love great. Pat. Here we go.
The bitch is back. Pick your jaws up off the floor, girls. You look like you just heard a ghost. Marsha, you look fucking amazing tonight. My God, you look gorgeous and stunning.
So
it's insane. Can you turn around so we can see the back? My God, the back
is
beautiful. I love the look.
Thank you.
I want to talk about Joakim Booster and kind of answer his assertion that he is the first two-time guest on Lost Culturistas.
It's true.
Because we all know that I was the first two-time guest on Lost Culturistas. Lost episode counts and very much so. A podcast is born when it is performed, not when it is recorded or airs. And what we created that day was very much a podcast episode. And in everyone's heart, they know that. And so I don't know what Joel's deal is. And I have to wonder if he is, and I hate to use this word, but... jealous.
Yep. Oh my god.
Oh my god, just like the Bible.
Anyway, Bhavna Lakshmi followed Lost Culturistas on Twitter.
Congratulations.
This week, and I couldn't help but notice that she wasn't acknowledging me on the platform. And so I sent a text to Matt and Bo and said, you know, Padma needs to acknowledge me.
And that was the cold
shoulder. So I tweeted out, I said, Padma, I'm a frequent guest on this pod. Please acknowledge me right now. And she only faved, didn't tweet back, didn't
but
follow.
But she did fave.
And I go,
count your blessings.
Okay, Padma. Because that wasn't really an acknowledge. And so I have to think if and when I do get famous, when I go around to all the late night shows to promote my latest project, my kind of anecdote and story that I will tell kind of belly up to Fallon's desk will be that, you know, Padma Lakshmi didn't acknowledge me before I was famous.
Wow.
And we'll laugh about it, but it'll be really real. Anyways, Padma, if you're listening, if you could hear this, we can absolutely start over. I would love to just, like, get dinner and do this in earnest, you know? Like, let's be friends. I would love to pick your brain about Casey from Top Chef Season 3, who was, in fact, important to me during my formative years. All is not lost. We can absolutely hit the reset button and get off on the right foot. I would love that. And just get rid of this toxicity. Anyways, I saw Love, Simon. I loved it, unfortunately. So sorry. I think it's such an important story to be told for my culture of white gay. And that's all I have to say for right now.
He's on the street.
He's on the street.
I want everyone to have a really nice week. I wish everyone peace, love, and light. I'm in a really positive place right now. And it's truly a new beginning. I have so many amazing projects right now that I have to
just
run off to. Expect really big things coming from me soon. I'm so excited for what I'm gonna put out next, and I think my fans are really gonna like it and be surprised by it.
That's how it ended.
This has actually been Pat Regan this whole entire time. God bless you, anyone listening. Okay, goodbye. Marsha, you look fucking gorgeous.
Thank you.
The car honking as he's in the middle of saying his projects.
Pat isn't your Tiny Tim. Like, Pat is the best. He's like, so he goes, may God bless everyone.
Yes. Wait, thoughts on Love, Simon?
I just saw, okay, I obviously had a bit of a skewed perspective from Sam and Bowen's Instagram reaction.
Yes.
But I loved it, and I loved you guys' article about it. So, but there were parts that were genuinely funny that were written to be funny that were like so good.
Sure.
But there were some parts that were absolutely insane.
Yeah, of course there were.
Oh my God. I'm trying to think of it because like there were so many. First of all, the woman from Insecure was so funny.
Natasha Rothwell was so funny.
She's
amazing.
And like, but it was like, I mean, first of all, the lead guy is like,
Nick Robinson.
Yeah, like he's like cute. Like, but I predicted it right because I was like, I predicted who it was.
I think I knew too.
I thought I knew. But, you know, it did take me on some twists and turns.
That's fun.
But, yeah, I'm trying to think about the parts that were, like, really crazy. What were they?
I'll
remind
tell you
me.
Which ones. The one that, like, Sudie and I saw.
The iced coffee looked, was crazy. I agree.
Yeah,
I
mean, coffee is
so silly.
Because, like, the beginning takes itself so seriously, and it is true. He's like, everything about me is normal, except for one
secret.
And he's like.
Yeah, it's like.
Okay. But it is important, Bo. It is important.
It's. Sure. The fucking like dance sequence in the dorm and like literally the set dressing.
The La La Land.
Well, it was like they were outside on this quad, but then like the art, like it's supposed to be this super overwhelmingly gay like visual, but like
they're wearing Rite Aid t-shirts
and the fucking and on the exterior, like the fucking art director, whatever, whoever in the art department just hung the smallest little pride flag on this giant stone building as if that was like supposed to like
I know it should have been guys with their dicks out. It should have been like fucking everyone booty popping.
That's what they can't show is like he's actually like in a leather bar like
well, like maybe, and then he says at the end, maybe not this gay. What he meant was maybe not this type of gay.
Right.
Maybe he's gonna go off to a dungeon.
Maybe
he'll go and be a submissive. But you know, you never know. But
well, I'm glad you liked it.
I mean, but some parts of it were like cringeworthy.
The part
cheesy,
that I did not
so
get
funny.
Was when
Like, basically, like, he's been outed to the whole school. Like, everyone knows.
That was
and then
awful.
And then he pulls up to pick his friends up, and his friends are like, fuck you for what you did to us.
I didn't understand that at
How
all.
How could you do this to us? You tried to ruin our lives. And he was like, guys, I'm sorry. And they're like, stay away from us. And
I
like,
got that because the
just
whole
been
time
outed.
He's treating his friend as like a pawn, though. He really is. He's like, well, maybe. And also, I mean, the guy who's supposed to be annoying, sometimes the annoying character is cast too well. And I'm like, I think if I see that actor in real life, I'm going to punch him.
He wasn't.
He did
a great job of being so
But
annoying.
It was, you know, actually, now that I'm thinking back on it, it was good, actually.
It was a good movie.
No, that's the thing is that it's not. Good. But anyway.
I think it was an amazing movie.
Did Padma follow you?
No,
she did.
I wonder why you thought that. No, if Padma didn't follow me, I would notice.
I thought she followed you.
I would love. But congratulations. I was going to say that, by the way. Well, congratulations on the Padma follow.
Padma, if you're listening, definitely
no
follow
pressure, No pressure. You know, I might be too man-hating. She seems very nice.
No, Padma
is very
liberal.
She has rough critiques on RuPaul's Drag Race. She is not Ms. Nice Guy.
I know. No, I love her. She's great.
She came through with the critiques on
RuPaul's
Drag Race.
She did, and she had
some
pointed critiques.
Now it sucks because, like, so in addition to all that other crap, I'm also fighting this, like, weird battle with Facebook. Everybody
yes!
is now.
Yeah, you're always.
Everybody's in war with Facebook. But Facebook has, like, banned me a bunch of times for these, like, crazy. Like, one time it was for this, like, photo of me as a 6-year-old saying, kill all men. Adorable.
Adorable.
And, but so now, like, what happened was basically we had this friend, Nicole. She posted 200-something photos of her being harassed because during Me Too, she posted this list that was like laughably innocuous. It's like
so innocuous. Like, here's what men should do.
Yeah, it was like good
most
men.
Basic things.
Talk to your creepy friend. And if you have multiple women who say he's still being creepy, don't bring him around to the bar anymore. Like, you know, really simple stuff. And dudes were like, I will kill you. And this one guy posted, this is why men don't trust women. It's like, oh, this is why.
So then, that's exactly
so
why.
So I posted as a comment underneath that specific post, men are scum. And then I even replied to that, like, LOL, guess I lost that guy's trust, you know, blah, blah, blah. So then I got banned from Facebook for 30 days for that comment. And it turned into this whole saga where now I'm, like, talking to other people because when you look into it, they have humans deciding what gets removed.
It's a fucking 20-something-year-old asshole wearing Warby Parker glasses.
And it's outsourced. Yeah, right. I just found out. It's actually, like, it's not always to a foreign place, but it's quadruply outsourced where basically they hire somebody who hires somebody who hires somebody who hires a freelance company who hires the moderators. Damn. And it's wild. But now, because that happened, all of the press that's been written about it, this is literally the line that I'm given. It's, Marsha Belsky is a comedian who calls men scum on the internet. That's literally just what they say. And I'm like, but that's not true. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, I'm a little more clever than that because I've actually come up with the full matriarchy where men are imprisoned by our system. So please just don't reduce it to men are scum because the militia has
there's
worked too
more,
hard
there's
for
more,
that.
There's more. Militia is, right. long, is stronger I, than you know.
Yes, embellishment.
Like, ban me for training a militia of women in the woods. Sure. But men are scum. I mean, come on. But so now I'm always worried when, like, people don't know me, like, that are, like, going to come to my page, like, because they're just like, well, what kind of a monster just goes around calling people scum for no reason? It's like,
God,
whatever. They can deal.
They can deal. And also, I feel like I've been off Facebook for a few weeks.
I want to get off so bad.
You sort of need to stay, do you think?
That's what I feel like is that because it started with people, like, reporting me, I have this ornery, like, stubbornness where I'm like, I'm not going to get off. But, like, but then I'm not ever going to get off for the rest of my life. I'm not going to come. But then, like, it's hard because, like, I do want to get off Facebook, but I told my manager, like, one of my career goals is to, like, not need Facebook because, like, when I was banned, I lost a $50 gig because I couldn't reach the guy any other way and they needed a fill-in that night. And I like, $50 is not, you know, nothing for a show. So I'm like,
Couple meals
right there, you know, get yourself a weekly MetroCard plus
get
a meal.
There's some of that.
There's the accent.
There's you know, that's
another
just,
one.
That's
another
my
one.
Inner monologue. 100%. But yeah, so it's like, you know.
Well, you're not very far from not needing Facebook as a thing.
I just want to get. But then I miss too, like, someone like, oh, why didn't you come to my birthday party? Like, you didn't text me. Like, you know, like nobody.
Sure.
I like that now people do birthday invites on email, which I like.
It's always the best policy.
That's like the best. Emails where business should happen.
Email
Grill culture number 45.
Emails where business should happen.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Should we move on to I Don't Think So, Honey?
Let's wrap this all up and do an I Don't Think So, Honey.
It's time.
Each.
Of course, we have a real champion over here. This is a Coach War participant.
Yes, yes. She was Team Matt.
That was
and
fun.
You represented well.
And you know what's sad? Because so I was debating between doing this one or the one I ended up doing, which was Mark Zuckerberg, because I was just going, you know, I was right when the Facebook stuff happened.
Right.
But then I knew like Tyler and Joel, they like knew the whole story. So as soon as I got there, I was like, ugh, I should have done the other one. So now I get my like, I get to do
oh,
the one that I was
one.
That I should have done.
Do you want to go first or should I?
You go first.
Okay.
Because you have one ready. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, when reality shows cannot choose finalists and so there's four.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bitch, no. There is a top two on reality shows. And if you cannot decide who needs to go home, guess what? You are not good at your job, because a good producer would get in there and have a decision get made, because that is why we are watching. We watch a reality show to see an elimination at the end of the fucking episode. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm sorry, but they are not all that good.
What is
with this? They know they signed up to be cut potentially, so fucking cut them. America's Next Top Model, there has been a true final four for 3 weeks now because they can't cut people. They just keep, and look, bitch, we get it. We've already seen the little edited package about their difficulty with their mother. We don't need to see it again. Get them off the show so we can have a good winner versus loser narrative. I want a top two. RuPaul's Drag Race, I'm looking at you. Do not do this on season 10 like you did in season 9. I Don't Think So, Honey.
And that's 1 minute. Gorge, wow, that's...
I feel very passionately about this. I don't want to see five people walk New York Fashion Week on Project Runway.
Completely.
It should be three.
But that was one of your more informationally dense I Don't Think So, Honeys.
That was great. I was scared you were going to pass out sideways like a child who locked their knees in choir.
Honestly, I feel very strongly about that. Because like with America's Next Top Model, there's four finalists. Yeah, and we're like, oh my God,
stupidest.
Cut these two girls. They're not going to win. Moving on.
It's the stupidest.
Oh, I just thought of another great I Don't Think So, Honey, too. But I guess I have to save that for the next one.
Yeah,
it's for the next one.
You'll do it again.
Listen, there's always chances.
Yeah.
Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Ethical consumption. Because guess what, bitch? Yesterday at the airport, I ate Chick-fil-A.
Woo!
I'm a self-loathing gay man who was going to contribute to this horrible bullshit fried chicken place.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's so good. And I had the spicy chicken sandwich. It was delicious. Mm. But everyone in line in front of me, and I could live with this. Everyone in line in front of me was clearly like a Trump voting just cookie cutter person. But I was like, it's fine. I will, if this is what it takes for me to like
seconds.
Be among you people. Then fine. I'm happy to share this common ground. But ethical consumption, look, you can't make us feel guilty about everything that we touch. Everything that we touch is going to be made by some horrible Halliburton person. It's okay. It's fine, guys.
15 seconds.
So go to your Starbucks. Don't buy local. Don't eat local. Go to your evil corporations, because at the end of the day, we're all
going to
suffer in the end for whatever reason. So
go down happy.
I don't think so, honey. We're all going to suffer.
And that's 1 minute.
Yes.
I agree with you. I never ethically consume.
There you go. Thank you, Matt.
I know. I mean, I love to like faux cry for a boycott just so that companies feel shame. But
yes,
you know,
and sometimes that's all it takes.
That's all it takes.
You can still buy and pay them.
I was traveling yesterday back from Virginia in the car, and so we had to stop at like a rest stop to go to the bathroom, and I was going to go to the Burger King, and they closed it up, and I turned around to my friend and I was like, they're closed. It's fine. Like, I saw myself do it later and I was like, wow, I was like too upset that Burger King was closed. They're closed. It's fine. They're
Anytime
closed.
My plan doesn't go my way, I'm pretty much full level upset. There's no in between for me. It's like either I'm really happy or like I trip and my day is ruined. Like,
wow.
No, not that extreme. But Burger King
meeting.
Being closed,
that
I mean,
would be a day
that's unacceptable.
No, it's not
unacceptable.
Unacceptable. It was also like 9 p.m.
Sure.
This
is
unbelievable.
This is one of Marsha Belsky's indelible I Don't Think So, Honey's. Marsha, you ready?
Yes.
This is Marsha Belsky's I Don't Think So, Honey. Her time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Straight men in theater. Don't you have enough? Don't you have enough? I mean, first of all, you get to just dominate in every other area. And then you come into theater and you have 9 million more parts than us, but one per every like actress. And when you're straight in theater, you get laid so much. There is too much. There is too much sex. And the thing is that sure. when you get so much of an ego, it's like they're rock stars before they even get out of the community theater. I mean, the thing is, what's nice about these guys though, is that if you're the one to enlighten them that they're not interesting, they get really obsessed with you. So that's like really fun. And some of great, of course, you know, if you're out there and you're a straight guy in theater thinking, you know, that's not like me, it is. And unfortunately, just leave theater to us because we don't have a lot. Oh, and bye.
That's 1 minute. Oh my God. Straight men in theater.
I know several of them and they are more successful than the gay men in theater, and it gets frustrating.
Well,
sometimes.
That and also, I mean, it's like they get fucked. It's crazy. Yeah, like every time they leave the bar. I remember I saw this interview with the guy from Glee, the douchey teacher. I saw him in Hairspray.
Oh, Matthew Morrison. Yeah, same. Yeah, Link Larkin. Link,
and I was like,
he is hot though.
He was like, yeah, like pretty sure I'm not gay because when you're straight, like you actually get laid a whole lot in theater. So I've never had a problem with women. And it's like, yeah, it wasn't as homophobic as all that, I don't think. But he was basically just like saying how like he.
Well, I get a lot of pussy. So.
Yeah, like he was just like. Trust me, when you're straight in theater, you know, and that's the thing. I remember being in these shows and there's like the one hot straight guy and every girl in the cast is trying to fuck him. Like, damn. And then I'm the one who is just like, I'll be like your fun, like fat friend.
I mean, deep down, that's all of us.
That's all of us.
Oh my God. This has been such a great episode with Marsha Belsky.
I mean, come on.
An icon. Go check out her stuff. Reductress
Live. It's going to be a very busy and fruitful
yes.
beginning of spring.
There you go.
Into spring, into the summer.
We are in bloom right now.
Check out Reductress Live at Caroline's on Broadway, April 26th to the 28th. Miss Andrew with Marsha and Ray. Listen to that podcast. Amazing
Shout
podcast.
Out Ray Sani.
Shout out Ray Sani. Miss you.
Shout out Melissa Stokowski for Handmaid's Tale the Musical.
Yes.
Shout out my mother.
Shout out my mother.
Shout out to the man himself, the Lord Jesus Christ.
And shout out to...
Shout out to Matt's Lord Jesus Christ.
Matt's Lord Jesus Christ.
And John Jealous. Legend.
Oh, and shout out to John Legend.
He's never going to recover from that part. I could tell he was thinking, how am I going to stop being
his voice is yeah. His voice is absolutely ruined. Shout out to Chrissy Teigen for the tweets.
For the tweets.
Great tweets.
Shout out to...
Padma.
Padma
Lakshmi.
Thank you, Padma. Okay, bye.
Oh, wait.
Oh, we get to
we
sing.
We have to sing.
Who are you tonight? Who are you, Padma?
That's Padma Lakshmi singing.
That was Padma Lakshmi singing. Who are you, Padma Lakshmi?
Thank you, Padma.
Good night, Padma.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.